Hello, hello, hello. This is Marco Miniman from the Aristocrats and other unknown territories, and you are listening to Sonic Perspective.
Hello, this is Nick with Sonic Perspectives, and today I have the pleasure of talking to one of the most active and exciting drummers on the scene today, Mr. Marco Miniman. Welcome, Marco.
Good evening and good morning.
Now, Marco, at this point, your discography is so massive, I could spend our half hour together literally just listing all the different albums you've been on. But let's start. You've got a release coming out this week. It is the debut and self-titled album from The Sea Within. Can you tell us a little bit about when and how you heard about the project and when you were brought in to be a part of it?
Absolutely. Yes, you know, that started actually with Jonas Reingold, who is from Sweden, from the band Flower Kings. And he already contacted me about like 6 or 7 years ago. And I was by that time on tour with my band, The Aristocrats, and also with Stephen Wilson. So, and I was really planned out and so busy that I couldn't, you know, do the album, and we had to postpone it. And Jonas kept it in mind, and well, he contacted me last year again, together with Loine Stolz, who's the guitar player for the Flower Kings. And well, you know, they said like, well, how about we do an album together now, and we all write and bring like some people together that we like, and yeah, and so, yep, that was the story. And then, you know, we kind of got who we liked, and we worked together on songs, and we booked a studio in London and worked on these songs together, prepared them obviously, and yeah, and I think, you know, the album turned out quite nicely and beautifully, so very excited for the release.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the I think it's one of the best releases of the year so far, frankly. And what's it like for you? You know, you work with a lot of different people, but this is, you know, hardcore prog, for lack of a better word. It certainly scratches the itch of that old school prog community, which usually calls for, you know, over the top instrumentation. Do you feel comfortable in that role?
Well, yes, I get hired for these kind of things actually a lot, to be very honest, even though, which is kind of really strange, my roots are not actually in what you call, you know, or what people call prog at all. You know, I actually to this day don't really know any Yes albums. And I grew up pretty much, you know, listening to Queen and Led Zeppelin and Frank Zappa and Ryuichi Sakamoto, these kind of things, but also like Public Image Limited or Kraftwerk. You know, I just like that kind of stuff. And but I was always interested, you know, in the technical aspect of music, just to kind of have it in my vocabulary so that I can form, you know, the right words when needed. And so the thing is, you know, once I started playing, you know, with guys like, you know, Stephen Wilson, but also Mike Keneally earlier, and then later on also with Necrophages, like a death metal band, and well, my own albums are full of technicalities here and there, you know, like the right amount, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it got like, you know, for some reason fashionable to book me for stuff that is impossible to play, which, which sometimes I regret. Sometimes, you know, it's great, you know, when people just book me and for like pop productions, and I love that. I just love just playing cool groove stuff, you know, but a lot of times I also get this kind of thing where some guy sat there and programmed some impossible parts to play, and then they go like, I wonder who could play this. Well, guess who's getting the call then?
Do you ever get a session work where you lay down some incredibly difficult stuff and then realizing schedules aren't going to work out and you won't be able to tour, and you just have to kind of feel sorry for the guy that has to come in and try and learn all these parts?
Oh, yeah, that sometimes happened there. I got like a few emails like, oh my god, I had to learn all your stuff. But you know, but hey, you know, I mean, it's fun, isn't it, you know, doing that, because, you know, just, and you know, I mean, and with computer technology and what, how people write these days, you know, that goes actually in both ways and in all ways, you know. Last year I got like this production from this young kid, you know, who's in San Diego, who pretty much grew up just with his software, you know, and he kind of programmed the shit out of it. And it's like, you know, some of the most complex things, you know, obviously he had like, you know, the drum computer only going, but he wanted to have it replaced by real drums. And there I was playing like, what was it? One song was like 23 minutes long or something like that, full with parts and tempo changes and weirdness and speed and finesse and whatnot. And you just go like, dude, you know, I guess I kind of, literally, when I get these productions, I sit here in my home studio and then I play like literally half a minute and then the next half a minute and then the next half a minute until the thing is done, because some of these productions are just almost otherwise impossible to play, you know.
Yeah. Now, one of the other cool things for the Sea Within, now, of course, there's no surprise that there's a lot of great drumming on there. But what did kind of surprise me is you're credited with guitar on the album, despite the fact that you have Daniel Gildenlow and Ronna Stolt both on there. How did you manage to slip some guitar work in past those guys?
Yeah, I didn't know how that happened because, well, we all wrote songs, you know, and I brought a complete song on my own, and I overdubbed guitars how I heard them, how I kind of wanted to hear them, and Reune kept them. He said, like, hey, I like those guitars. And so, you know, I think they stayed.
Yeah. Hey, easy enough. Now, of course...
There was one of these things. We don't have these kind of things where we go like, oh, you know, we are like all divas and we need to be featured and in the spotlight for what we do best. I guess we're way past that stage, you know, hopefully, right? You know, so the childishness is actually not really kind of a factor anymore. I guess we're just like really in for, you know, playing the right music, you know, and playing the right notes and trying to make the song as beautiful as it is and not like our egos, you know, not pleasing them.
Yeah. Oh, and you'd mentioned that everyone had brought in, you know, had written towards the album. For those tracks that the other guys wrote, how much freedom did you have in the drums? Did they come in with their drum parts in mind, or did you really have your free reign to do what you wanted with those?
Actually, pretty much free range. How that usually works there is there might be, you know, when somebody comes with a song, I would ask them for having, you know, them programming something like that, you know, program a drum part, what they have in mind or what they hear. And then they usually come like with a groove, but just like a hint, just like, you know, how the vibe is supposed to be. And then you kind of, you know, create your own world, you paint your own painting, you know. So, and then obviously, you know, we get together and then, you know, find out, you know, what really works best for the song. And that goes, I guess, you know, for all instrumentation.
Mm-hmm. One important gig you have coming up is at Night of the Prague here, and we found out from Reune Stolt that Petra Wavis is stepping in for Jonas Ringold, who recorded on the record. As part as half the rhythm section, what's it going to be like for you trying to lock in with someone new for that debut show?
Oh, I'm not scared of that at all, or not concerned, you know, because I think, you know, that especially Reune, you know, who suggested him, you know, he knows already, you know, he's an experienced musician. And so are all the musicians who are part, actually, of this project, you know. And I think, you know, without sounding too self-indulgent or something, but I guess, you know, whom to pick, you know, who can do the job right. And so I'm not concerned, actually, at all about that. You know, that project was, this project was kind of, you know, the foundation. It was made, actually, of kind of, you know, putting, you know, a puzzle together and kind of hopefully, you know, hoping that it worked. And because, you know, music can be written easily for that, you know, you can all bring, like, you know, songs together. And then, you know, yeah, okay, we can create something, we can play together and create chemistry. But there is, like, you know, a difference between, like, you know, just the chemistry that is sort of right, but then also, does it have the magic? Yeah, that's the other factor. So, you know, I'm not concerned about playing the right notes, you know. It's more like, you know, getting together and having a good time and also kind of clicking on a personal level. Regarding this one show, yeah, should be fine. It's a bit unfortunate that Jonas cannot be there. You know, I guess he's on the road with Steve Hackett. You know, so yeah, obviously it's a little bit of a bummer. But you know, I think, you know, we're gonna have a great time, you know, no matter what.
Yeah, and what we had heard, it wasn't even intended that way. It was accidentally booked, and at that point, it was kind of, you know, a force of the hand. Unfortunately, now. For that Night of the Prague gig, it's going to be long overdue. I'm finally going to be able to see you live, but I've seen live DVDs of you in the past, and you seem to be just a very energetic and enjoyable drummer to watch. Do you give thought to the performance aspect of things when you play, or are you just focused on playing and it just comes out that way?
It just comes out that way. You know, people always say, like, hey, you're the happiest drummer, you know, you always smile. And I would reply like, no, it's actually not smiling, it's pain. It looks like I'm smiling. No,
masking the pain.
Yeah, right, exactly. No, I'm having fun playing music. And, you know, that's what it's all about. You know, that's why I'm doing that. You know, it's like it brings me great joy, you know, creating and then also performing. And, yeah, and I guess, you know, what you project from the stage, that's what the audience receives. And it's an energy exchange, you know. You get the energy back. You know, if you give energy to the people, that's the energy you'll get back. You know, and for me, it is all about fun, and I love when I see smiling people in front of the audience, and I don't, and not kind of suicidal people in front of it, you know, in front of me. Like, you know, I want the people to have fun, to have a good time together. It's like going to a party or having like a nice dinner together, right?
Mm-hmm.
A good conversation, and so. So to me, that is actually the positive aspect. And no matter what kind of music you play, even if you play like dark music or beautiful music or like aggressive music or something, but there's always fun in it. You know, that's the thing. So,
yeah.
And I guess, you know, with the Sea Within, especially, we have like a lot of beautiful and long, you know, pieces, you know, that, you know, you can make yourself at home at, you know, and I just hope, you know, that we connect that way.
Yeah, and with them, it'll probably be a little less jarring than, you know, say sometimes with Stephen Wilson, when he's known for having some very sad, melancholy songs, and you just see you there smiling in the background, you know?
Yeah, you know, it's not always sad or whatnot, you know.
Yeah.
I don't even know what to say.
Now, although, you know, we talk about The Sea Within, it's coming out Friday, so it's certainly very current. If you had a main band, I'd say it certainly would be The Aristocrats. You're going to be touring through Europe in September. How are things shaping up from there? Are you guys working on another studio album at all?
Yes, we will. Most likely we will. We took like a little hiatus, which was like... Well, about a year, you know, we did play shows last year, so it was not too long, you know, but we were all occupied with our other, you know, projects and bookings, you know, so Guthrie was playing with Hans Zimmer, and Brian and I were playing with Joe Satriani, and I was doing my latest solo album as well, Borrego, which also features Joe Satriani and Alex Lifeson together on guitar on various separate tracks. So, you know, we all had things going on, and and I was also doing like a tour with Mohini Day and Rhythm Shaw as a trio. So I started working with Mohini and then Pliny, this other guitar player. So we did like a show with them. So there was like so much going on that, yeah, definitely The Aristocrats, you know, had to wait a little bit. And but we were never kind of, you know, putting the whole thing completely on ice. So we were just waiting, you know, for the right window to come back out and then kind of go on tour. And that's what we're doing right now. And I'm glad that the people didn't forget us.
Yeah.
So we'll definitely kind of having fun actually on that tour. And then kind of, you know, thinking about like writing new songs for the new album then.
Okay. And, you know, you'd mentioned Borrego was the latest solo album, came out in 2017, and you have a lengthy solo discography. Now, at this point, I'm assuming, you know, between session work and different tours, you know, there has to be no financial need, certainly, to do solo albums, but yet you do them with regularity. I'm assuming there has to be a creative output reason for you keeping on top of that.
Yeah, you know, the thing is, I just love creating. I just love writing. For me, this is not work. For me, this is like fun. I just see other people go to work and work 8 hours a day in an office, you know. So for me, it's like, you know, I just love taking the guitar or the, you know, play on the keyboard or piano or drums and just play. And then all of a sudden, a great idea falls from the sky. And it happens all the time when you play. And then you capture them and then you make something out of them. And then when the right amount of songs comes together and you're happy with them, why not releasing it, you know? So that's really, you know, the thing and the beauty of music, in my opinion.
Yeah. And
or musical freedom, yeah.
And speaking of that freedom, it brings us back to The Aristocrats a little bit. You know, compared to a lot of things you do in bigger bands and, you know, sometimes in confined spaces of what another artist wants, how freeing is it for you on the drums to play in a band like The Aristocrats that's a three-piece and that is, you know, allowed to let loose, and there just has to be so much room to explore the drums compared to other projects, I would think?
Yes. It's for all of us the same thing because, you know, all of a sudden, see, when I write, when you hear my solo albums, I stretch out. I kind of just do string arrangements. There are piano parts. There are multiple guitar layers. There are vocals and drums and bass, and maybe other instrumentation happens. Now, when I write for the Aristocrats, I have to both at the same time restrict and expand myself, you know, because, you know, just to go, okay, I'm writing for a trio, so don't bring too many other instruments in. You know, sometimes for studio purposes, you know, you would do that then, and you would kind of, you know, overdub them. But you always, for the Aristocrats, keep in mind that we have to translate them as a trio. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so that's sometimes a fun challenge. And obviously, you have like the musicians who are able to translate them. I mean, Guthrie is a phenomenal guitar player. You know, he can pretty much do anything. And come up with amazing sounds and playing technique and styles, and I love it. You know, it's just always refreshing, you know, going on stage with these guys. It never feels unsafe. Mm-hmm. If anything goes wrong on stage, seriously, like two of us could carry the show for the next 5 minutes until the other instrument gets fixed or something. That's how safe it feels playing with those two guys. It's like, you know, very, 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 very comfortable.
Yeah. Yeah, so a little bit restrictive as a songwriter, but freeing as a drummer, for sure.
You have to kind of make sure to play the right things at the right time. It's always, obviously, you know, when you start playing with a new band, the risk of overplaying, especially in a setting like that, when you have, like, you know, songs. And, you know, so it's always good to listen back to the shows and then go like, you know, what does the song really need? Where is, like, you know, space? Mm-hmm. Do, you know, give the space when it's due. That's important. And kind of, you know, create fireworks when needed. You know, it's like, yeah, that's pretty much, you know, the mission. But yeah, space is good too, you know, yeah. Especially in a setting like that.
Now, you've done two albums now with Tony Levin and Jordan Rudess. Are there any plans for a third album with them or anything with Jordan on his solo works?
Yes, exactly. I just played the new Jordan Rudess album, and a great 22-minute piece, actually, in fact. And I'm sharing this album with Rod Morgenstein, who's an amazing drummer, you know, probably from the Dixie Drags. Remember those guys?
Yep.
Steve Moss. So, so we're doing that album. That is fun. I just recently did it, just literally a few weeks ago.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah.
Now, you know, with all these big names and what a name you've made for yourself now, I'm guessing that you probably have more than enough offers for your time. So at this point, are there, you know, paying gigs that you just turned down because you're not feeling it? Or is there particular things that you look for in your session gigs now that, you know, I want to do this for this reason and the pay is just kind of separate from that?
Yeah. Well, I've always pretty much been a little bit like that, you know, that especially when you tour. That's the thing where I make, like, absolutely conscious decisions where I think, like, do I really want to identify myself with this? Because playing a studio job is one thing, but kind of going out and standing with these people on stage, and you gotta be solidly behind it, I think, you know. And so these are conscious decisions, you know. Like, everything you see on my social media, for example, you know, the people I advertise there and project myself with, you know, that's, you know, the thing. These are the things that are, you know, sort of my own and that I want to kind of, you know, be seen with. It doesn't really mean that I don't want to be seen with the other things I play, but you know what I mean? That's, you know, what I'm kind of, you know, part of.
Yeah, you have a certain image and you want to be associated with certain things that fill that image.
Absolutely. And as far as studio jobs go, that is something that is very fun and comfortable to do from my home. I have my set always mic'd up. I have two drum sets here, one in my upstairs studio and one downstairs in the bigger room. And so, sometimes, you know, just people send me files in, then I kind of send them files back. And it's a very, very comfortable and lucrative way of working, you know, because, well, you know, it's I can make my own schedule. I'm earning money with this from my home, and I get to play like many different styles and meet like many cool people. It ranges from like film music to hardcore rock to like, you know, stoner rock to prog or to jazz, you know. Mm-hmm. And recently I had like a Latin rock kind of thing, you know, which is, you know, from San Salvador, which is amazing, and you get, like, you know, all these things, you know, pretty much sometimes in the same week, you know, and I'm, you know, having great joy with this, you know, so I don't turn these things down unless something is really, really badly recorded or something, you know, then I would say, like, okay, guys, hang on. But most of the time, the people who hire me for things, they know already what they want, and, you know, they would like to have my style on the record. So that's I feel very fortunate, you know that I'm getting, you know, such a, you know, how I would say, like, you know, nice clientele, you know, who know exactly what they want, and so yeah. That's great.
Well, now, you know, at this point, you're talking about, you know, doing session work on albums, and a lot of younger musicians who might be looking to make it might be looking to get money in the industry. You know, that is one avenue for them. Do you have any suggestions on how you, what's the best way to make a product that, you know, or to shape your drumming to what people might want? Is there any tips that you'd like to share?
Very much so. I think, you know, the most important thing is that you should follow what you have in your mind already, how you want to sound like. You know, see, the thing is, like, I never wanted to sound like anyone else. I wanted to sound like myself. And even as a little kid, when I started playing, obviously, you know, you have to be inspired by someone. So when I listened to, like, let's say Led Zeppelin records and like John Bonham or Buddy Rich, then later, or Vinnie Colaiuta, and all these amazing drummers, you know, then Terry Bozzio, Simon Phillips, you know, these are all, like, great drummers. But when I was, like, you know, like, let's say 12, 13 years old, I kind of was like a sponge. I soaked everything up, you know, and then I wanted to see how they play it. Mm. And then I learned how to play it, but then I wanted to make my own thing out of it. Then I would think, like, oh, cool, I understand how this works. Now let me do something else with it. Let me create something maybe on top of it, or let's maybe play it on different instruments and maybe two hi-hats instead of two kick drums, and then play paradiddles with hi-hats, or, you know, or whatever it comes to mind, and kind of, you know, create your own style, because that to me was, like, you know, the biggest feeling, actually, that was worth more than money, because money can't buy that. You know, if you believe in talent, or if you have a bit of talent, you know, knock on wood, you know, hope that's the case, you know, and if you feature these things, then this is something that, you know, no millions in the world can buy. Only you own this. And somebody comes along with a helicopter and goes, like, look, I got a $40 million helicopter. Then, you know, you can go, like, hey, but I can actually subdivide a 15/16 and play a septuplet. Can you do that? No, you can't. Well, now you can take your helicopter and fly back home then. You know, these are, like, things, you know, that are, you know, this is, like, very important, I guess, you know, for young musicians, you know. That's actually something to strive for, and this is something, actually, this is a goal. What makes you unique? Being unique, and this is what you get hired for, because if you just want to be, like, you know, a regular studio cat or something like that, and want to kind of make dough to kind of, you know, play in Nashville and play, yeah, not that there's anything wrong with it, you know, mm-hmm. But if that's the case, yeah, then you get these jobs, and then you might, you know, get bored at some point, because maybe you're not even playing sometimes, you know, that, you know, music that is fun for you.
Yeah.
And so I always kind of, you know, would recommend, you know, to kind of just be unique, you know, try to, or, you know, just come up with your own style, with your own voice. And then, you know, I think, you know, other people will hear your voice. So that's what I believe in. But I, again, you know, I only can talk from my own experience. But, you know, maybe that's worth sharing.
Yeah. I'm going to take us for a moment into Bizarro World here. You famously, years ago, were one of the auditioners for
Dream Theater.
Yes, I'm not going to go in detail. I'm not going to torture you with questions that you've probably had a million times before. What I want to know, whether it be Dream Theater or somebody else, could you ever imagine a world where, you know, look at where Mike Mangini is now. You record an album every other year. You tour now and again, and that's all you do. Can you imagine just getting a salary and occasionally playing drums?
Are you talking about being in a band?
In a big band where it's like, you know, this is your only gig. You're not going to be that active, yeah. But you're going to have a nice salary, yeah. and that's it. Could you ever imagine stepping back and having that kind of limited role?
You know what? Here's the thing. Yes, I could if I really like the band. That's a big aspect. If I'm a total fan of the band and I actually would really like them and I could identify myself with them. Let's say, for example, my dear friend Alex Lifeson, Rush, you know, for example. Neil stopped pretty much playing and, maybe he on another place, but he stopped touring. But this is a band, you know, where I can see like, wow, that's great music. I love these guys. You know, they're fantastic human beings and also great musicians. They have something to say. It's not too pompous. It's like, you know, original. It's great. It has a mission. And it's musically rich without, you know, trying too hard. You know, it feels organic and just beautiful. I can see something like that. Not that I'm kind of, you know, I'm just pointing out an example because, you know, I also believe in the chemistry of a band. See, like, for example, a band like The Police, you know, without Stewart or without Andy Summers or something, wouldn't create the same sound they have. Yeah. So there are certain bands, especially in trios, where it is incredibly difficult to replace like a character. But yeah, I could see myself, you know, play with a few artists, you know, who I really like. Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Now, kind of as we wrap down here, there's one subject that I wanted to tap on that, you know, has always been a bugaboo to me for certain artists. I don't know your thoughts on it. And as someone who has been a drummer and such a well-known drummer for so long, when you play live, do you prefer playing to a click track?
No, absolutely not.
Man after my own heart. I am so glad to hear it. What do you think is lost with the click track?
Well, you know, it's like putting a tiger in a cage, right? You can't move, you know? It's like, you know, it's like you need a little bit of freedom, you know. Some parts, you know, need sometimes to have like a little bit of a speed up thing to then come back to like a little few beats slower. You need to be aware of, obviously, of your time. And, you know, but then there's no reason if you have a good timing, you know, and if you, you know, then there's no reason to kind of, you know, restrict yourself with a click track. Like, imagining the Aristocrats with a click track, that would be horrible. we don't even in the studio use a click track, you know.
Yeah.
Like, and there's rarely.
Certain situations and bands that come from all over can be difficult. They might not have the time to rehearse together. You know, there's reasons for it. Lighting can be synced up, all that. But it just seems to me when I see a live band, I sometimes immediately know they're playing to a click track because they're more focused on playing with themselves than locking in with one another.
Yeah.
And I always feel that is something that it just seems to be lost in this, you know, movement we've had towards the click track.
Yeah, there was like one especially interesting moment that I've experienced once on stage, and it was like a tour for a Stephen Wilson thing we did. We did this album called Hands Not Erased, and that one came out, and we went on tour, and there was like one, oh, I forgot what the song was called, a longer song. I think it was called Ancestral or something.
Yes,
and,
Ancestral, yep.
Ah, there you go. Yeah. I forgot most of these songs already. I haven't listened ever to them again. So we played them live and we had to play everything to click track because everything was accompanied by film.
Yeah.
You know? So everything is synced. And I was the guy in the back, you know, behind the drums starting the film. You know, so I had to make sure that everyone is ready on stage. So I would always look around and go like, okay, guys, ready? You know, and then, boom, you know, and there it goes. And then I have, like, you know, the computer next to me, the click track starts, and then, you know, strings come from tape and or from the computer and everything and whatnot and sings to the film. Now, in that song, I think we didn't even, that was a good thing, we didn't have a film for that particular song. However, there were like, you know, many, you know, orchestral arrangements actually in that playback. And all of a sudden the computer froze. And, and just, you know, in the middle, we just started playing the song. And I think after the first half minute or something like that, the whole thing died and basically crashed. And I remember, like, you know, Stephen and I looking at each other, like, you know, just with question marks going like, shit, so shall we stop or continue? And I just nodded at him and I said, like, let's go, let's do it. You know, we just continued just with the band we had and just playing without the cues and everything because we had even cues, you know, on the play along, right? You know,
yep.
So it was actually quite crucial. That song could have easily been completely fucked up. And And then we played it, and we made it through the whole thing, and with, you know, less backing, but with us as the band, just as purely as the band. And it was not only me and the band, but also the crew and other people who then came to us and go like, you know what? That was actually the best version you ever played that song.
Yeah.
They ever heard it, because it was not restricted. All of a sudden, there was like a certain fire in there, you know? And that was cool. That was cool to witness.
All right. Well, I want to again thank you, Marco. Remind everyone, The Sea Within debut album's out June 22nd, The Inside Out, playing the Night of the Prague in July, and The Aristocrats are going to be in Europe throughout September. So thank you very much for taking the time today and talking to us, Marco.
Well, thank you kindly. And yeah, absolutely. See you soon somewhere on this planet.
Yes, we'll see you in Germany. Thank you very much.
Right on. Take care. Okay, thank you.
So that was my chat with the incredible Marco Miniman from The Aristocrats, from The Sea Within, from his solo work, from so many other things. Please do not forget to like our Facebook page, our Twitter account, our YouTube page, any other social media sites. Always please help spread the word so we hear more about Marco and other great artists. And as always, don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to get interviews and, of course, our Talking Perspectives discussion series. At this time, I'm going to leave you fine folks with my favorite song off of the new The Sea Within album. This is An Eye for an Eye for an Eye. Enjoy.
Finding your heart, once it's gone, glow. if somehow winds can meet, and with freedom in your heart, denying the facts all apart. And you lie in the facts all apart.